This is in December 2009. Carolyn is quizzing Ion about Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol. She's talking about the obelisk in Washington because it's talked about in The Lost Symbol.
There's all the things about America's great obelisk, the symbol of ancient mystical wisdom rising toward the heavens at the heart of a nation.
The last great erection, is that what you
mean? Yeah, right.
Of the phthalic acid of life.
And then there begins this whole backing and forthing about the ancient mystical wisdom. And it goes on and on until it's being told by the chief Masonic guy in the book that actually the Bible is the ancient mystery. The Bible holds all the various mysteries that people have been keeping secret all these years. They call it the lost word. The whole book is about the lost symbol. So they're saying the lost word is actually as the first words in the Bible. In the beginning was the word.
You just opened up all of the books of Moses, the Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Genesis, Kings, Chronicles, your Exodus. Mm-hmm. When you open those, yes, that's what they're based upon. Mm-hmm. That's what it's based upon. But would you like to know what the secret is? Can we just get to that and save all the pandering to get around to it?
Yeah.
That the power of all creation is in the spoken word. And if you get that, then you don't need anything else. And you can study till Jesus comes. And it won't matter because the word is.
They go on to say that it's all about the book. It's all about the written word.
But see, if it had to be written word, then God the Creator would be screwed if they didn't read and write. But it doesn't work that way. And your meme of the day, Bob's Chip Bodies, they've been greasing up. And now they don't even use words to use words. OMG, what's the BFD? We don't need to learn your words.
Yeah.
And your mind is very tricky because your mind doesn't really see the word anyway. It just sees the first and last letters. You think your little query where every single word is spelled incorrectly and it's just gibberish, but yet if you read it, you can read the sentence and understand what it means, and you don't know how you're able to do that. Well, how you're able to do that is that your mind only uses symbols. What? Your mind only uses symbols. What? Your mind only uses the symbolism. Mm-hmm. And then takes the symbols and makes a practical application, as Marshall McLuhan so aptly stated and quoted, and Bob can give you song and verse, of exactly how the android meme is embodied in the dynamic of the words or the creations that are summons from the dogmatic essence of the consonant, constant consonant of the vowel of the vowel. You're going back to your symbols, and they're becoming more important than your words. And that's what he was saying, and everybody laughed at him, and he was like, nah, you're right. What was I thinking? You know, that sounds silly. Mm-hmm. And yet, he was laughing all the way through because it was. Okay. So much was that it is. So much is that it can be. So much can be that it's referenced as empirically true.
That's why Ion tells the clients, if you want something, talk about it all day long, how you want a Snicker bar, and say it to everybody how you love your Snicker bars.
That's exactly correct. And then by default, it has no choice but to be your experience. You provide no other laudable conclusion. There's no other capacity made possible. That's why these drugs are giving these people all these problems, because they say, take this, and oh, there are certain side effects that make you, you never won't work. You cannot see, you cannot pee, the golden years are killing thee. They undo the whole dynamic so much so that they'll embrace more of the side effects than, or causality, than they do the benefit of what you're taking the damn thing for and start with. And then you wonder why it's your medicine's killing you, even with no death.
I know this was just a novel, but
it was just a novel. It was just written words. It was just introduced as a means.
Right.
It was just embraced that it's just about almost now become a holistic religion.
Yeah.
It's just a tiny creation. It was just a little bloodline. It was just a little way to think about it a different way. It was just a little way to take on all of the papacy and question every dynamic that the Peter's Church, not John's, but Peter's Church, was built upon. It was just a little whimsical thought that activated human creators to such a degree that they were just astoundedly dumbfounded by this delicious interaction with this piece of fiction, which has now been born again. It was just a little nothingness. Never mind.
But they got it wrong because they focused on the book.
There is no significance to the written word.
Right. So,
none.
Yeah.
Zero.
The focus of just a novel is that it's all about the book, which just reinforces the whole left brain literacy.
Oh, I guess that would be a novel concept to do it that way.
Right. Actually, the foreword to the Masonic Bible, is they wrote that out. Time is a river, and books are boats. Many volumes start down that stream, only to be wrecked and lost beyond recall in its sands. Only a very few, endure the testings of time and live to bless the ages following.
Yeah, there's a yin-yang conspiracy between time and books to reinforce each other.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Oh, it's true. It was written down.
McClellan said oral culture has a sensibility that makes reality. Oral culture, they know that you make when you speak. The guy says, how do I know the fact of stone without the word stone? That's an Eskimo who says that.
Thing
some
is,
of the stoners say that too, Bob.
So then there's some dialogue about why do you think the Bible has survived thousands of years of tumultuous history?
Has it? Wait a minute.
Well, it's got changed constantly.
Well, how old is this empirical reference document?
400 years.
Well, boy, there wasn't even writing. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the language to write. Oh, except don't forget that ancient Samaritan Hebrewoid. Now, that's significant. But other than that, it was all like the Masons' word of mouth.
I was saying that the Bible is only 400 years old because that's the King James Version. What the Catholics have? They have a Latin Bible? They don't have a King James Version, correct?
That's correct.
They could have more accuracy.
No, they don't. They have the monk's version of the scriptures, which is subject to the cadence of the order. What do they call them?
An order, I think.
Okay.
So do the Freemasons pass on the, quote, secret that when you speak, you create reality? Do they know that?
They understand that if your word stands, if your word is plumb and square, then it will stand. You will not unsquare your knowledge, meaning make it not straight. Okay? If your words are applied through the cycles of the Mason.
You don't want to unsquare.
You don't want to hit a straight lick with a crooked stick. You want it to be plumb and square. If you're plumb and square with every word you use, then you'll never be crooked.
You can stay on that path with Freemasonic knowledge?
That's the only knowledge there is. There's not much to this thing after that, Bob. See, it peters out. That's it. Now you can go to the beach.
Okay, then they talk about how the different Gospels in the chapter spoke in parables, and they use that to say they were, you know, hiding wisdom. And they talked about the Gospel of John 4 warns, I will speak to you in parable and use dark sayings.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of talk about that.
Anomalies.
Evil, but then they said, no, its true meaning is it was shadowed or obscured from the light. So, again, hiding things. And then the parables have two layers of meanings, quote, milk for babes and meat for men. Milk is watered down.
Yet they're both proteins, aren't they?
So then all this talk made me think of the Emerald Tablets and the origin. So when Moses was hanging out in Egypt, was he reading the Emerald Tablets?
Didn't have to read them.
He got them spoken to him?
That's correct. Very good.
I was going to say, no, he was an ascended man.
No. He didn't start ascended.
So who spoke them to him? Was he right there with Thoth?
He was not with Thoth. Do you understand when we speak of mantles? A baby will come forth, a child, a marvelous creator, and humans will speak over this child. And it becomes the layer of the mantle, the surround of a fireplace, to a degree that it becomes what it's based upon, the life force.
No.
It's activatable.
We're talking about a mantle on a fireplace.
No, it's,
no, we're not.
It's
we're
a mantle.
We're talking about a mantle on a life.
It's a metaphor? It's some...
The reference in your scriptures, when a human creator is ready to give up the ghost, they pass their mantle to their predecessor.
So why are we talking about mantle in relation to Moses, was it?
Well, no, we're talking about mantles is how you become in your ascension process of how far you go.
Yeah, we were talking about he didn't speak to Thoth. Then the mantle process came in. Somebody else mantleized Moses.
Yes, spoke those words, and those words took hold and became part of his beingness.
Well, who was it that did it to him?
These little Hebrews. Hebrewloids.
Hebrewloids.
Funny, they didn't look Jewish to us.
Yeah, were they humans? Or?
It's not that simple. You... You can't quite get there from there, but you're very close to the basis of the understanding. Because once you have the understanding, that's not even a question. The point is, did he get it from unrealized creations from the Gulf and came, and then someone had to validate that in his world and life? Okay, if that's what you want to say, then yes. They said sweet words over him and charged him, imbuing him with supernatural power, if that's what you want to say. But it's not really that way, because it's still not more powerful than the individual creator. You see, because Moses spent all of his life telling God how he was less than.
How old was he when he was mantleized?
13.
So somebody visited him, or was this authorized by the Pharaoh, or was this like a secret initiation?
What's the difference?
Did the Pharaoh do it then?
Never. He didn't know. Pharaoh didn't know.
Yeah, the ones that came and did this to Moses, it was not seen by others when they did it to him.
In the last books of Moses, the whole conversation as the Pharaoh and the God, which was God, remember Pharaoh was God, the whole battle was Moses' God is more powerful than your gods. That's what it was all about. Ta-da! And they said, Moses' God is more powerful than your God. And here you are, all Pharaoh of all of Egypt. Everything is that you flip your little cattail to shoo away the flies, and kingdoms fall. And here this Hebrewloid comes in here and says what's going to happen and what's going to be, and let my people go, and speaking to God like he's a god. And then it comes to find out they decided that the whole gist of the, what caused them chariots to roll, and Judah Ben Hur to get all tangled up through the Roman Empire besides, was that they weren't going to have it. Moses' God was not going to be more powerful than their God. And that was the whole fall.
Who's Judah Ben Hur?
Hur. It's the reference of how the Romans got tangled up in the Egyptian story of old.
The mantleization, it sounds like some special people privately came to him when he was 13.
Yes.
And unrealized creations, he wanted that, so it came to him.
Yes, and so it must have been in his reality, or it wouldn't have shown up in his beingness. It was foreign, but it wasn't so foreign that it caught him unaware.
Okay, the hero in the book says, I'm pretty sure the scriptures describe in detail a physical temple that needs to be built. because there was a lot of talk before that about, you know, man is the temple. And the other aspect of that, they're going on about how the temple is the mind. There's no talk about non-physical. It's, you know, body and mind.
That's the book bias.
Yeah, totally. So he's saying, I'm pretty sure the scriptures describe in detail a physical temple that needs to be built. The structure is described as being in two parts, an outer temple called the Holy Place and an inner sanctuary called the Holy of Holies. The two parts are separated from each other by a thin veil. And then the woman in the book says, have you ever seen an actual human brain? It's built in two parts, an outer part called the dura mater and an inner part called the pia mater. These two parts are separated by the arachnoid, a veil of web-like tissue. So I thought that was very interesting, where there's these veils described in the Bible and then in anatomy.
Is this Solomon's temple that you're describing?
Well, the question would be, is there a correspondence or association with the thinning of the veil that we've been talking about?
No. They're talking about recognizing separations. And so that goes all the way back. Now, Bob, we're going to have to engage a eureka on you here, mm-hmm. because that's the easiest way to get you caught up right quick to what we're talking about. The nuances of what they call the pea brains. Remember the version insane and the pea brain?
What is the pea? That was the, yeah, the...
Those were particulates that allowed you to be in more than one space at one time so you could dimensionally travel.
They had that in any of the eurekas we saw, Carol?
Bob, you talked about it all day, every day, and the name of the show was Insane in the Pea Brain.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Well, that's a better analogy than what your book writers are trying to separate or bring up to the surface for you to understand. If you could activate a pea brain organism or field particle generator that could allow that to be easily accentuated or known, then that would be a better way to understand the inner workings and the outer workings of the dimensions of the labyrinth of the mind.
Rather than having a temple demonstrated.
Well, the temple's okay because that's what they created and there's nothing wrong with it. But see, you immediately flip something to where the most human creators go, well, I'm not a Hebrewoid and I don't know this and I don't know how to get that and I don't know why Solomon was so wise and why he built this big house. And if Solomon was such a big goober, why couldn't he keep his temples and why didn't he have to keep getting tore down? And, and you know, if it's so damn good, why didn't it last?
Carol, in the book, are they talking about rebuilding the Solomon's Temple or just
no.
a Freemasonic temple, some special temple?
No, something in the scriptures talking about a physical temple that needs to be built. And then the woman goes to, well, our brain is the temple, and we have these temples in our head.
What part of the Bible is that in there?
Corinthians 3:16.
So Dan Brown is highlighting this temple quote.
Right.
And
also referenced in Chronicles, too.
So, Carol, and they say this is to be done, or someone says, no, we don't need to build that because it's inside ourselves. That's what they're saying, forget that.
Right.
And why did you bring that up?
I wanted to know if it had anything to do with thinning of the veil. Is our brain veil thinning in order for us to break down these conduits in our labyrinth?
The veils that they're speaking of would become the oscillatory walls of the labyrinth.
So they do talk about veils in the brain, Callan?
Yeah, there's dura mater, pia mater, and they're separated by a veil of web-like tissue.
That's biological facts.
Biological facts.
Yeah, so they're saying that's a metaphor for the outer temple mentioned in Corinthians. And Ion's saying those are just celebrating the separations in your labyrinth.
Right, but then Ion just said the veils they're speaking about in the brain become the oscillatory walls of your labyrinth mind, so...
Want to define oscillatory?
Moving.
It's the building and the blocking and merging, Carol.
And if you can move them out of the way at the right time, then you have more access, right?
You have Alzheimer's.
Which is good, because you don't... Yeah, your body gets healthy. Remember that, Carol?
Your body has no resistance, and it actually allows itself to be whole without its disease.
That's why I can't remember anything. I'm getting healthier and healthier and closer to Alzheimer's, Carolyn.
But they use that as a bad thing.
Yeah.
All that happens is that people clear their slate.
Right.
All these years of life that have been the big, horrible, terrible thing, people have had allergies so much so that they can't live. And they can't eat this, and they can't touch that, and they can't be in a room with peanuts and Fruit Loops or Looney Tunes or whatever that is. And then they finally slip out of that, what you call clinical Alzheimer's, and then they can eat all those terrible, horrible things that would kill them dead. They have to have an EpiPen because anaphylactic shock would take them right out. All of a sudden now they catch themselves eating these very things that would have been their doom because of their labyrinth. All of a sudden now there's no walls, and so there's no doom.
It does seem like this veil can be manipulated in the brain.
Yes, it can be manipulated in the brain, but that's not the parallel for the separation between physical and non-physical. Because
yes,
you can have non-physical and have no brain.
They are mainly talking about the body and the mind throughout, and the mind focused on the book learning, so there's really no talk about the spirit man or the non-physical.
Exactly.
Now, there is one thing, actually, about a meditator. Apparently, the human brain in advanced states of focus will physically create a wax-like substance from the pineal gland. This brain secretion is unlike anything else in the body. It has an incredible healing effect, can literally regenerate cells, and may be one of the reasons yogis live so long. Can Ayan tell us more about this wax-like substance? Is it real, and does it do stuff?
Okay, if you're talking about the collection that would be controlled through the hypothalamus and the pineal glands, then those secretions are not anomalies that just to the shaman or the hogi yogis or the crystal lickers or whatever you want to call that. That is a simple natural expression, any more so than someone who has a raging temper has a super easily activated adrenal gland. So that could be an equation, but in an algebraic format, you don't know what X is. So we say, how do you get there from there? So the same way that a type 2 diabetic has a decreased production of insulin, is that also an aspiration of enlightenment?
Mm-hmm.
They know it makes you less than. Well, you can take your body and become such a yogi, you can get so heavenly bound that you're no earthly good. And so you could hang around for a whole very long time and nobody would ever notice because nobody would ever care because you'd be all tied up in your third range of yogidom. You know, when we go the stretching parts that you ascend to in the processes of quieting your mind.
Working on this wax limited emission makes you rather stupid because it's a natural process. You're just making too much out of a natural thing.
Yeah, because the what I said in the beginning, the collections to the hypothalamus and pineal, those areas produce hormones naturally. So the yogis are just focusing on the production of one particular type abnormally.
It's the same process that gave you opposing thumbs the first time.
Creating those hormones is part of our maturation from the animal kingdom?
The difference between you and the beast.
The dude, yeah. Those hormones are part of what
made our thumbs different.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that this yogis go off, and this book is analyzing the chemistry of the brain, and all they have to know is that when you speak, you create reality.
Because otherwise everybody'd be hairy, wouldn't they?
We'd still be animals.
If the waxing process that the yogis come to place that guarantee them longevity on the planet, it would also sync them up so they'd all be hairy. They'd be, you know, hair growing out of everything and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, explain why that would happen.
Well, they can't either.
Well, I mean, it does happen.
What could is as likely as validating the point that you're going to get this bluey, sticky stuff in your brain that's going to make you live forever. Well, you get some of that and you could just say, well, then it's all is lost because everyone's no longer hairy. That would be an aspiration of longevity of how your growth of your hair is.
He's using it as a metaphor for the brain gluey stuff. The growing the rule comes in, you got a lot of hairs, you get more hairs, you get immortal. Same ridiculous physiological symbol.
Exactly.
Is the difference between humans and beasts speech?
No, because some humans can't speak, and some birds can.
Those that can't speak, can they create?
They certainly can.
All right, so we were saying that you create through the word.
Now, that's the final frontier. The first line is thought. The first line of sensory perception.
Is thought. Thought is the first line of sensory perception.
When you have thought, then you run it through your senses to see how it's going to go.
So the process of creating through the mouth is the last part of the process that begins with thought.
Yes, but see, creation can happen by pointing. If you can't speak, if somebody cuts your tongue out now.
Joyce Binnings Wake talks about gesture as the first language.
That's an outsourced product of thought through sensory perception.
So this point, Carolyn, we're coming full circle in a way, that speech is a secret. If you think speech is just your mouth emissions, then you're missing the point of McLuhan and James Joyce. Communication is creation. Gestural, whatever thinking.
Yes, yes. Here's another example that's not quite as graphic. When you do telemetry imaging, they can see it. Okay, now ESP. You don't have to speak a word to hear ESP and speak ESP.
Telemetry is a technical thing used in space or laboratories or something.
And telemetry calculates in a wave format what is occurring, the validation of a creation. Telemetry imaging doesn't require words.
It picks up stuff.
Yes.
So now we're getting broader. Now the television is a creator. Television creates.
Yes.
You might have to have humans as content, but you can play tapes.
Well, the same way you have to have people in the mall to make their force field work.
In Washington?
Yes, you got that. Good.
The beginning was the word, and the word was anything you humans make, Carolyn, including your gestures, including your thinking. It then breaks down into everything, which is the meaning of Finney's Way. It's showing you that the beginning was the word, word's creation, and then it makes everything the word. I said that to McLuhan. I said, are you a word analyst? And he said, yes, if you consider airplanes and bulldozers as the content of the word. Everything communicates or creates. Now, Ion, correct me on that. What are we missing here?
You're not missing a thing. The however part is how that statement is true. That's a true statement, but then the question is how is that true? Well, the reason that it's true, however, is the input or the orchestration permitted by the human creator. The bulldozer won't do it until you crank it up and put fuel in.
Right, the labyrinth of the mind determines what you are effective in.
Affective in.
Effective in your creation.
Good. Good, good, good. That was very good.
Yeah?
Yeah, and the last part of what I took from the book is they at the very end, the woman who's actually a scientist in noetic sciences.
Instead of noetics, they're a bunch of Freemasons around Edgar Mitchell because he went to the moon.
Right, they're trying to scientifically trying to prove the ancients. So,
disprove the ancients.
Well, no, they're trying to prove it. She is.
No, now wait. So how does science do it? If they can't disprove it, then it is.
That sentence about proving count is false. Oh, there's an insight. That is the cliche. Science proves thing. When you first hear Ion start saying science disproves, it contradicts the meme, the way people think. Oh, science proves thing. But Ion points out, no, they prove things by trying to disprove it. And when they can't disprove it, then it is. It's kind of proven. See, that cliche is what Ion is always clarifying.
Isn't that noetic?
So she's saying the ancients already knew many of the scientific truths we're now rediscovering. Within a matter of years, modern man will be forced to accept what is now unthinkable. Our minds can generate energy capable of transforming physical matter. She paused. Particles react to our thoughts, which means our thoughts have the power to change the world.
That's a bunch of New Age stuff, many books have said, right?
Right.
But I find Ion clarifies that, complicates or dismisses the simplicity of that, and they don't even know the implications of what they're saying. Would you agree? That was pretty cliche what the scientist said there. Well, true, but very limited in a way.
Exactly. It was the best shot that they could, so they didn't get crucified, Bob.
He has to make making money, so he says, I'll make a lousy book so I can keep making money because I can't put out the real stuff I might know. The book sounds really shoddy, Carolyn.
What I think it does is it takes words and symbols that are sort of about the culture.
Allied with mystery.
And make people think that they've...
Are hearing the mysteries explained.
Right.
And the explanations are ridiculous.
Why don't they talk about these human creators that are so superfluously innocuous in their web that they cast, of what kind of fish they're going to capture in the web or netting that they're using, a focus point of fishing?
You mean the authors of this book?
Not just this book. We wouldn't give them that much credit, but Arjun is open it up a little bit.
Well, who were you referring to? Approximately
Gutenbergs.
The Gutenbergs? All the writers?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, writers. Good.
Okay. Yeah, why couldn't you discuss all day, every day, the things that have slipped through your cracks? There's a million times more that you've let go that's more significant, more earth-shattering, more mean-posing, more archetypal rattle-shakers, rafter-shakers that you've let slip.
You'd have to give an example because no one knows about those that have been let slip.
Well, really? That's interesting. The anatomical dimensions of a bumblebee.
No scientist has looked at that.
Well, yes, but it can't fly.
All right, it shouldn't be able to fly the way...
Oh, you're saying look at anomalies in nature.
If you ask for an example...
Of a mystery.
Yes,
of a mystery.
If they let those go, and they can't disprove it because he does. But yet, everything that they've laid out to say about it is an impossibility.
I like the way you call them the Gutenbergs. That's Joycean. You know, the whole bunch of writers, a bunch of Gutenbergs, or the I people. I think the reason they forget about the bumblebee is so many books have been written the last 400 years that all these imagery is piled up, and people are wallowing around in the dumpster of Gutenberg and thinking they're cracking things, and they don't even go outside and look at the bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find yourself being judged and limited by what Google has to say about everything.
And a lot of print content on Google. Google moves print and images around rapidly.
But you gauge your place of knowing on what Google portrays as is.
Here's an important point. People used to tell me, sophisticates, I don't get much out of movies, but I'll go to the mainstream pop cult movies to find out what the public's into. Mm-hmm. And then they might bring that to their ad agency and figure out how to get the demographics to exploit it. But people look at the Google, they look at Drudge to find out what the others are thinking. It's a way of providing contrast for yourself.
Marshall McLuhan called that the author of the demigod.
What did he call the author of the demigod?
The meme of the day of what's being portrayed to gauge how the public emeritus, how they're dealing with it.
Yes, in 2 points, John, like take that phrase, the author of the demigod?
Mm-hmm.
It's another way of saying... McLuhan's phrase, the word makes the market. The word's a god, the word makes the market. And then he said the Nielsen ratings were Big Brother, were the actual control point. But the Nielsen ratings are to gauge where we're at. Yes, so you're correct in saying it that way. But
I'm sure Ion is relieved to hear that.
Yeah, no, it was pretty touch and go until I got into it. But the... Yeah, you were almost expelled. You had gone too far, I think, with that one.
Carolyn, me thinks he protested.
Yeah.
No. We think that you won't shut up. No, listen to this. But no, it's
Bob. It's now time for the woo-woo section of our program.
Yeah, okay. So the important point is in McLuhan's unpublished occult writings. you would talk about the demigod and the Gnostic god. That could be symbolically related to what Ion said, and Ion might be quoting something Marshall wrote in an unpublished article. You know what I mean, Carol? I'm saying that people look at the media. It's a mirror to find out where they are or aren't. The habit is you keep looking at it and you kind of adopt the concepts and forget that you should be using the Google as something that you should ignore. Mm-hmm. But people get involved in it. Mm-hmm. So there's a somnambulism in looking at what the Google is saying.
Fine.
The distraction of refraction.
Yes. And that's your summing of my perfect words?
Yes.
Were my words perfect?
Of course. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This book, The Lost Symbol, is promoted by the book industry because it's making the book sacred. You know, that's the hidden plot of the Dan Brown novels, is they celebrate literacy. And so that's why the industry promoted the first book, Da Vinci Code, in New York in the late 90s. I remember that. There were articles on it. They were promoting it, you know, a year before it was published. It's about the celebrating the book. It's self-referential masturbation by the publishing industry.